Hey, this is Joe Harris, writer of the X-Files comics. You're listening to the X-Cast.
Welcome back, everyone, to the X-Cast. The truth is in here. And you might be wondering, Tony, this isn't the Podwatch. What's going on? What are you doing to us? Well, today, we're having a slight little break for one day from the Podwatch. And it's in order to, I suppose, do a little bit of promotion. But it's X-Files time promotion, so it's relevant. But I've got with me my favourite podcaster, your favourite podcaster, everybody, Darren Mooney, to talk about his X-Files book, Opening the X-Files. Darren, it's great to have you back on.
It's fantastic to be back on, and I'm sorry to distract everybody who's expecting a Podwatch today.
Well, you know, they're just going to have to live with it, because, quite frankly, they need to be spending the day reading this tremendous book, which has just come out, which I had the pleasure of to read a little bit early, because you were very kind and sent me a copy. And it's a fantastic look at the show we love. So do you want to just tell us, to start off with, a little bit about what the book is exactly and what people could look forward to?
All right, so the book is basically a couple of years ago, starting in 2013, which would have been the 20th anniversary of the book, of the show, I began sort of writing reviews online of the X-Files, going through episode by episode and sort of season by season. And the plan was originally that I would do one season a year and sort of keep with it that way. So I'd do every October, you know, October being a very important month for X-Files people, I'd run through the episodes, and I'd do that and bring it up today. Because, I mean, at that time, there was no sense the X-Files were coming back. There was no sense of real urgency or excitement. There were sort of, you know, the murmurs of the movie and stuff like that, but nothing had really sort of materialized or crystallized. And then about 6 months later, I got an email or a point of contact from somebody I'd never heard of or heard from before, who said, actually, look, there's this show that's going on. It's the X-Files Files, which is Kumail Nanjiani's sort of podcast covering the X-Files, which he began, I think, in 2014-ish, 2015-ish. And they were like, oh, he's mentioning your reviews and stuff. And he was, which was very, very generous of him. And so I began... I thought, okay, well, look, if he's going to be mentioning my reviews while I'm doing it, I should probably also maybe write the reviews as I'm going. So I tried to basically write through the X-Files as it was, you know, sort of in time roughly with that. And what I thought I'd do is I'd try to offer a kind of a complete view of, like, Chris Carter's work. So try and get in a little bit of, say, Millennium or The Lone Gunman or Harsh Realm, all the spin-offs that he did. And even look at some of the fun stuff, like, say, that the single, you know, Mulder and Scully by Capitonia, or the comics, or the tie-in books and stuff like that. And basically just try and sort of make a run through the 10 or 11 year period of sort of where the X-Files was a dominant cultural force. And then basically I did that. And after that, I was sort of, I wondered, basically, could I turn this into a book? Would people sort of respond to it? Would people like to read it? And I reached out to a number of people and basically made some inquiries. And I got a response back from the guys who published the book, McFarlane's, who, by the way, are a superb publisher. Like, a lot of what I'm saying here is, like, I feel like this is going to be the worst promotional interview ever, where I was a really, really lucky person who looked into having the right people respond to me at the right time. But, basically, McFarlane's got back in touch with me when I said, look, would you be interested in maybe publishing a set of these reviews and sort of like combining them and maybe sort of releasing a set of volumes? And they're like, that's great, but we're a book publisher and we'd like to make money. And we can't really republish stuff that you've already printed online for free, because that's not how business works. I was like, okay, that's a fair point. And they said, would you be interested in maybe doing something like original looking at the X-Files? So maybe instead of reprinting the reviews you've already written, structuring them into something like a singular narrative, a book, basically, that would take a lot of the stuff that I touched on as I was reviewing and sort of like thread that through the years of the show that run from a couple of years before the pilot through to I Want to Believe. Now, this was written in 2015, so it doesn't cover the new series. But I mean, you know, hopefully if it does very well, we maybe might do a second edition or something like that. It'll cover the revival. But basically, so the book is, if you've read my stuff online, even if you haven't, it's a chapter by chapter, year by year sort of look or trip through the X-Files that looks at a combination of things. So it looks at the production of the show, what was happening behind the scenes. So the cultural context of the show, so stuff like what was happening in television at around the same time. So like where you could see why the mythology was such a big deal, or why, for example, like this, the shot of the submarine jutting out of the ice in Colony and Endgame, why that was such a game changer in terms of what was possible on broadcast television in the mid-90s. And then even just sort of maybe dissecting a little bit of the themes and sort of the recurring fascinations of not only Chris Carter himself, so obviously we touch on stuff like the show's kind of the complex gender politics of the relationship between Mulder and Scully. Like, so for example, the show's forthright feminism in like regards to Scully's control of her own body and her desire to control her own procreation, which sort of bleeds through the early years of the show, through to perhaps some of the more conservative values that you get later on, which is sort of the value of the nuclear family, which sort of bleeds through in the eighth and ninth season. And then even wed that maybe a little bit with some recurring themes, some recurring focus on particular writers. So for example, what is it about a Darren Morgan script that makes a Darren Morgan script special? Like, what is it about Vince Gilligan that when he looks at the world, like, can you see the roots of Breaking Bad, for example, in the episode of the show that he wrote in Pusher, and obviously in Drive is the one that everyone's going to point to. And sort of, so with that in mind, I sort of set out to write a book that would basically tell from beginning to end what is, I think, a version of the story of the X-Files. I don't want to claim it's the version, because obviously there have been countless events written, countless accounts written of the show. Obviously, the complete X-Files with Chris Knowles and that sort of stuff that have gone into it in a great deal of depth, production history in the context, stuff like that. But I just wanted to see if I could build something that would be interesting and provide a sort of a context for the show, and sort of like a prism through which you could look back and sort of trace these lines and see where the show came from and where it went, and even the footprint that it left in its wake. And maybe that's a very pretentious way of putting it, I don't know.
No, I think it's more than fair, and I think that's exactly what the book does, really. I think it manages to, you know, go into levels of insight and critical thinking and depth that I haven't really read in a lot of, you know, books before. You know, most of the books I've read, and you know, The Complete X-Files is a terrific book, you know, and Chris is a contributor to the podcast, and he and the guy he did that with did some great work. But there are, I think that was a little bit more, from what I remember, and I haven't read it in a while, but it was a little bit more based on telling us the production history of the show and a lot of the insights, which is all fantastic stuff. But I think what you did, as much of that, is actually go into the underlayer themes, you know, the kind of things that Chris Carter and his team were even maybe unconsciously tapping into, you know, like the Second World War guilt and all that kind of stuff that comes through in season three, which is possibly my favourite chapter, actually. Although I really enjoyed all of it, but I think the analysis of season three, particularly where you go into that, you know, and you've talked a little bit about it on this podcast, you know, on Anasazi, and I'm sure when we go into season three, when you come back on that, those episodes, we'll delve into it a little bit more. But it's that kind of insight, I think, which is why, as somebody who obviously knows a fair bit about the X-Files over the years and has followed it for 20-odd years, I was genuinely reading it thinking, I haven't thought of this before. You know, this is really insightful stuff. And I think anyone who really enjoys your blogs about this, and I know a lot of the listeners who listen to the X-Cast do, I think they're going to get a real something out of this book.
Well, thank you very much. I mean, like, it is one of the things that really strikes me about the X-Files, and it's something that I think holds up very, very well about it, is that, like, a lot of people talk generally about the mythology and about whether Carter had that mapped out as he was going, and I think that, like, we've talked about in the Podwatch and on the podcast a bit, is that the sense that maybe the finer details of the show weren't worked out. A lot of it was maybe improvised as it was going, or interfered with, or driven by outside factors, which is, like, a reality of TV production, because obviously, like, Carter didn't sit down in season one and say, okay, at the end of season seven, David Duchovny is going to want to leave and star in Evolution, so I better plan that ahead. But you do have a sense that, like, Carter had this stuff that he was interested in that was fundamentally, like, part of, I don't want to say part of who he is, because that's really pretentious, that sort of assumes a level of intimacy, but stuff that interested him and engaged him. And you kind of sort of see that bleed through the work. And, like, one of the things that sort of struck me in doing it was I didn't want to do, like, this is, you know, the breakdown of the mythology, or to do it like a narrative history, which is like Mulder discovers the cigarette smoking man's his father, and more sort of say, well, look, what are the things that run through the entire show? Like, the Chinese wall that exists between the mythology and the standalone episodes is very clear in a continuity standpoint, but there are points where you look at individual episodes and like standalone episodes, and you see things that clearly concern Carter and things that he's thinking about. And even, I think maybe if you said subconsciously, I I give him more credit than that, but stuff like the theme of memory or the theme of fathers, which extend beyond the mythology. So, for example, like Aubrey, I think I've actually maybe talked about it, I may be talking about it on the Podwatch, and I may describe it as my favourite Nobody Else Likes This Episode X-File, which is the one where it's all about memory and it's all about violence and it's all about men who inflict harm upon women. And these are all core themes in the mythology. And you can sort of see that even in this little standalone episode that I think a lot of people don't really pay a lot of attention about or think about a great deal, you see the Carters sort of woven in these themes and fascinations into that. And sort of you could sort of see that bleed through. And there's a lot of that. I mean, I did try to do when I was writing it, and I'm glad that you singled out the third season chapter, because I'm very happy with that. And I'm also very happy with talking about the eighth season, because those are sort of, you know, self-contained chunks. I think those are two of the best 20-odd episode seasons of television ever produced. They're just phenomenally constructed. But I did try and break down sort of like what was happening in the world in each of those years, what was happening on the show on each of those years, and then sort of could you see that shining through in the show itself. So, for example, like, there's this weird fascination in the fifth season with, like, children and dead parents. So you have, like, even the horrible tree episodes, Schizogeny, is this idea of children rebelling against and murdering parents. But you see it in stuff like Kill Switch, you see it in stuff like Chinga, you see it elsewhere as well. Like, and you see these, if you start noticing these patterns, they're fascinating because they suggest that there's not necessarily like I sat down and plotted the season out in terms of A, B, C is going to happen, but like when we were plotting the season, we were thinking about X, Y, and Z, and why were we thinking about X, Y, and Z, and trying to make sense of it, which just, it fascinated me, and I'm glad that you sort of, you liked that.
Well, two things. One, I really love Aubrey. I think Aubrey's great, and me and Brandon Shea Metella had a really good conversation about all the themes in Aubrey when we discussed it. Two, It's funny you should mention season 8, because that chapter was honestly one I was about to say was also a big favourite of mine, because it does the same kind of thing. It brings that insight, because it was a very interesting period of the X-Files and it's a very interesting season. So, yeah, it's funny you should say those things, really. In terms of actually writing it, you know, you said that you took a lot of the content from the blog pieces, which obviously are, there's more content, I suppose, in all the blog pieces, because you've done thousands and thousands of words for, you know, 200 odd episodes and change of all these TV series. But what was the process of actually, what was it like actually trying to distill a lot of that? And what was your process in terms of writing? How long did it take? You know, how did you get to the point where you were able to just condense all this, and how did you structure it?
Well, I mean, one of the things about blogging is I was talking to a bunch of, somebody invited me in to talk to a bunch of kids about blogging. I felt really old. I pulled the chair down and I sat down and I put my cap on backwards. I said, okay, let's wrap. I was kind of thinking, like, what I like about blogging and what I really love about blogging is the sense that it's instant, and it's sort of, it happens so quickly. So it's, you put it down and it's out in the world immediately, and it's like your thoughts pretty much straight from your brain to your fingers to the keyboard to the rest of the world. And it's fascinating because it allows you to discover things that you're sort of interested in and things that grab you, and allows you to wander and sort of waver and sort of go, ah, well, this is kind of interesting, or maybe this is what's going on, or was, for example, you know, that the affair and all things, did that sort of tie into the Clinton, you know, the Clinton impeachment that was happening at the same time? That sort of stuff. What happens then was when, because I did write a lot about the show, and I wrote a lot about the spin-offs, and I wrote a lot about the comics, and I wrote a lot about everything else that was sort of happening at the same time. And being honest, like, there's a very high signal-to-noise ratio. I love every single one of those. Now, to be honest, like, I think you've written a lot yourself, and I think anybody who's written on will empathize with this, is sometimes when you go back and read the stuff that you're writing, as much as you enjoyed writing it, it's a little cringy in places. It's a little bit like, what the hell was I thinking when I wrote this? Like, there are points where I'm very embarrassed to go back, and I say embarrassed, I'm not like, I'm kind of smiling, like, I was such an idiot when I wrote this kind of stuff. It's like, what the hell did Darren from 2 years ago know? And I know that 2 years from now, Darren from 2 years ago, what the hell does Darren from 2 years ago know now? But, like, when you're blogging, there is that sense of instant stuff and sort of instant response and sort of, like, throwing ideas at the wall and seeing what sticks and getting to do really sort of crazy things and really sort of outlandish things and maybe propose ideas that you go, well, maybe this is going in this direction. Then, like, two or three episodes later, you go, no, it's not. Whereas with the book, and I want to actually, I should be entirely clear, there are a lot of people to thank for the book, and I'll probably go into a bit more depth later on. But one of the things that I really appreciated about the guys who published it, McFarlane's, who are a fantastic academic publisher, which is very cool. I like that one of the quotes on the back of the book is, if they were teaching the X-Files in college, this would be an essential textbook, which is like the least like advertising friendly slogan ever. But I'm like, that is amazing. I want that. That is like perfect. That is like, that encapsulates kind of what I would like this book to be.
Yeah.
But because everyone wants to think about school when they're reading about the X-Files.
Of course.
There is this, when you're writing the book, they asked me to structure it, and they asked me to figure out basically what I wanted to do at each point. They asked me to map it out ahead of time, and they asked me to sort of give, even down to like word counts and estimates and stuff like that, and material that I would be drawing in and material that I would need. And it wasn't in like a sort of a, you know, do your homework sort of like, you know, supervising you, staring over my shoulder kind of way. It was in making sure that I knew what I was talking about, making sure that I wasn't starting the book without knowing where it would end, as I had with the blog project. Because when I started writing the pilot, I had no idea how it would end. And I mean, if you go back and you read the post, you can see that at various stages, there are points where I'm writing in a different way, where sometimes I'm writing in the first person, a third person, sometimes I'm drawing in outside material, sometimes I'm not. It's very chaotic, and it's fun to do, but it doesn't really cohere perfectly. The thing with the book was I started knowing what I was doing at each step of the way, and I knew that when I was going to talk about Scully's the attitude towards, say, Scully's abduction the second season, I knew that when I talked about it in the third season, I'd be talking about how the third season reacted to the second season. Or I knew that when I talked about Scully's, like, the treatment of Scully as a mother that came up in the fifth season, which is the fourth and fifth season, which is a little awkward, a little out of nowhere, and a little cringy in some places, I would argue, that I'd be circling back around that in the eighth and ninth season. So I could set that up, and I could sort of pay that off. And I mean, I make it sound like I'm writing a fiction book where it's like you introduce the character, and then you do a twist and a reveal and stuff like that. And it's not that exciting, but it's a little bit like that. It's setting up points that you know you're going to hit later on. And I mean, I would argue that you should be able to, if I've done my job in any way competently, and I'm not sure I have, but I hope I have, is that you should be able to read any one of those chapters that grabs you with interest. So, for example, if you were interested in Millennium, you should be able to read the fourth, fifth, and sixth season chapters and follow along Millennium, sort of follow that thread yourself. You want to read about Vince Gilligan, maybe the third season and the sixth season, and they'll make sense of themselves. But I really wanted the book to read like, if you're reading from beginning to end, that it's almost, it is a story of the X-Files. You can see stuff that develops and grows. So you can see like the Morgan and Wong, how they wrote in the first and second seasons as compared to how they wrote when they came back in the fourth. Or stuff like, for example, how Carter sets up this idea of sort of evil in the first season of Millennium, and then sort of whether or not he explores that then in, say, the eighth season of The X-Files. I wanted it to read like that, and I think, like, the publisher were very useful in that regard in terms of mapping that out. So I had a plan, I had a lot of raw material to draw upon, and it's very important to stress this, actually, because I got very, again, this is me being an awful PR interview person. I should be like, oh, I had a lot of genius insights and it was fantastic and I did all the research. I went down to the library, request original copies. I did a bit of that. I obviously did, because any writer does that. It's hard work researching a book like that. But I was very lucky in that the X-Files fandom, first of all, the X-Files fandom is fantastic, just in general, to be absolutely honest, as compared to, I think, a lot of other sci-fi fandoms. And I'm not just saying that because I'm writing a book that I would like them to buy. I genuinely believe that. It is also the fact that there's such wonderful documentation online on sites like, and I know you have Matt Allaire on here from the X-Files Lexicon, and stuff like Eat the Corn as well. Like, there are these wonderful sort of resources that are online that have documented this stuff and brought it together. I mean, even the old Alt X-Files news group, which is a fantastic resource. I mean, Kumail Nanjiani, when he was doing the X-Files files, would go back and read posts from the original air dates. But you can go back and you could actually, like, navigate. It's like living history. You can walk through the foundations of modern fandom. And if you haven't done it, I do it a little bit in the book, so I mean, buy the book and read it. But no, I mean, if you want to do it, you can do it online for free, and I wholeheartedly recommend it. It's alt.tv.xfiles, I believe. But you can find it with a quick Google. And you can actually see stuff like, you can obviously see the development of words like ore shipper to shipper and stuff like that. But you can also see stuff like, you can see the fandom changing as it gets a bit broader. You can see it beginning as like a bunch of people in like 1993 who like worked in colleges and academia, who had early access to the internet. And then you can see the deluge of other people coming in, you can see the fandom getting younger, and you can see it sort of developing, and you even see sort of schisms that happen in the 90s that are a lot less prevalent now, I think, luckily enough, because they're not as intense as they were. But you can, like, you can chart history through the internet, because the X-Files really came of age in the internet, so I was very lucky in that regard. Basically what I did was I took all those concepts and just sort of put them in a blender and sort of delivered a smoothie, basically, of them. And I'm actually really proud. Again, this goes back to the ways not to sell your book, Darren, but I'm really proud of the this is the worst publicity podcast ever, but I'm quite proud of the footnotes section, because the book reads as a narrative. It's a story. You can follow it. It has characters in it. Obviously, they're real people and quotes from real people and stuff like that. But if you follow it from beginning to end, there are also like little interludes and little strange observations that I couldn't quite fit into the text. They would have sort of distracted from the text. So I can talk about stuff like the strange sight of the lone gunman wandering around in pajamas cooking breakfast for each other, and the evolution of how they're portrayed as this dysfunctional family unit that I couldn't necessarily work into the text, but I could stick in the footnotes and stuff like that. Or even stuff like sort of references to for example, the broader changes in culture that weren't fitting with sort of what I was writing at the time. They're all in there. They're all footnoted and sourced as well. Like, so it's, if you are reading it and if you are enjoying it, I would recommend, I will read it again, obviously, but no, I recommend sort of browsing the footnote section and sort of following those threads, because there's a lot of interesting stuff in there. Like, the thing about the X-Files is trying to cram it into a book is just, it's impossible. There's just so much material there and so much great stories. And like, and again, this is why I don't feel bad about this book, because I've talked about how, like, The Complete X-Files is a fantastic book. I've talked about how Eat the Corn is a fantastic resource. I've talked about all these things that are not my book that are fantastic X-Files stuff that you can do and you can have and you can sort of explore. And I still don't feel like in doing that I'm doing my book any disservice, because I'm like, well, I feel like it's so vast and it's so big that there's so much to explore that I really, really hope that I can add something interesting to it, even after everybody's explored it so well and so consistently and so fascinatingly.
Well, I think you have. I really do think you have. And I think it will resonate with a lot of people who read it. You know, I think a lot of people who listen to this podcast and read your blog will buy the book. So no, I really think you'll have etched your mark on the X-Files history in that sense. But where then can people buy it is the big question. Like, where's the best place? I mean, Amazon, I assume, but is there anywhere else? What, direct people?
All right, well, I mean, you can buy it from pretty much anywhere. It is widely available. It's not going to be on store shelves, unfortunately. We're not quite at that level yet, but it's you can order from Amazon. You can order from all the regional Amazons, so amazon.co.uk, amazon.de, amazon.fr, all those places as well. But you can also order from, like, other places, like Waterstones here in Ireland, Easons here in Ireland are also sort of stocking it on their website. But, I mean, internationally, stuff like Target have it available. It's... Even if you go into a bookstore, you should be able to place an order for it as well. I mean, it is... I'm actually very, very pleased with the company that are publishing it, who are MacFarlane's, have been very generous and who've been sort of very supportive and very encouraging, because they do have a network for getting it out there. And they do have sort of, it is, well, it's not going to, nobody's, I'm not doing a book tour, I'm not going to be doing signings or anything like that. It is, it's not something that's hidden, or it's not like you have to, you know, email me and send a check in the mail. It is available anywhere where good and even not so good books are available to people. I would also point out, actually, I know that it's coming up to Christmas. I know it's tight, and I feel it's kind of that thing where I feel a little awkward, like imposing, being like, buy my book. If you want to support the book and you can't afford it, or you just don't want to, which are both valid options, local libraries also have like budgets for this sort of thing, and they'll be able to stock it for you as well. So if you do feel, please feel free to use your local library and ask them to order in a copy, and that way everybody can share it as well.
Well, that's a really nice idea in terms of getting local libraries involved as well and everything like that, and supporting the local library. So no, I really like that idea. So yeah, whatever way you find to do it, guys, I mean, it'd make a great Christmas present for people, let's be honest, right? But certainly your fellow X-Files fans. So it'd be great if you supported Darren's books. He spent a lot of time writing this stuff, and it's well worth your money and your time.
And I mean, people have generally been very, very nice. I'm actually really flattered by the response that it got. And I mean, I said that I should thank people, and I really should. I mean, you've been fantastic, Tony, and I think anybody who listens to the podcast knows that you are freaking tireless and well, just amazing. You're a machine, and I want to thank you, like, because it is, it's great to come on. And I've talked about this, like, my conversation with you talking about, like, One Breath is one of my favorite, like, talking about the X-Files memories. I'm very, very proud of that. But I mean, even stuff like Kumail Nanjiani, who I wouldn't have done it without, he writes the foreword to the book, actually, and I'm very, very flattered, and he was incredibly generous. Like, this would not have been possible if he hadn't stumbled across the blog and thought it was something that was maybe worth mentioning. Like, I mean, there's an episode where of the other podcast, The X-Files Files, where he's talking with Emma Caulfield about Darkness Falls, and they're quoting from my review, and it's like, that's a little bit of like my warmth, my childhood, like it's, and I remember her from Buffy, and it's like, that's amazing that this is happening, and I really am, I'm flattered, and it's just incredible the support that people have already had for it, and I'm incredibly thankful for that, to be absolutely honest.
It's tremendous. So hopefully it will continue to grow, and you know, more people will continue to find it, and you know, we'll discover more from you. And obviously, you know, the blog is still going, the movie blog as well, which is I'm particularly enjoying right now, your Star Trek Discovery breakdowns, which are really insightful in that, because I'm a big Star Trek guy, as people may know. So yeah, make sure you keep reading Darren's stuff on the blog, and he'll be back tomorrow actually on the podcast, as it turns out, because this this is going out on the 30th of October. So yesterday Zach Moore and Brandon Shea Mattella promised.
Oh no! Oh no! Red... I know what this is.
promised Red Museum and Excelsis Day, and instead you got me and Darren. But next tomorrow, with the Podwatch, will continue with Red Museum and Excelsis Day with Darren and Chris Knowles. I think you're with on that one, aren't you?
So I am. I'm indeed. It's actually a very good episode. I was about to say, I don't feel bad about stopping people from listening to us talk about Excelsis Day, because anything that stops people remembering Excelsis Day is a good thing. But I'm actually really proud of that. And Chris is a phenomenal like guest as far as these things go. I mean, it's I'm really actually quite happy with the podcast I did with him. So you can check that out tomorrow. Actually, I think it's a good one actually, because he goes into a great deal of, like, I the two of us talking about Carter is just, yes, very, very geeky. Very geeky.
It makes for excellent listening. So, yeah, thanks, Darren, for coming on and promoting your book. I'm sure it's been really, really challenging for you to do. but no, it's been great. Thanks.
No, thank you very much for the opportunity.
Join us for the Podwatch tomorrow, back on schedule. And as always, remember, trust no one.